At the age of 30, Dorothy Fields became the first woman to win an Oscar for a song. The song was The Way You Look Tonight, with a melody by Jerome Kern. Deborah Grace Winer wrote about the life and lyrics of Dorothy Fields in her 1997 biography, On the Sunny Side of the Street. I asked Winer if there were other firsts that Fields could be credited with.
Yeah, she's really the only woman to have that kind of a major career. There were other women who were writing, but nobody had a sort of a sustained success. When Dorothy began writing, the whole idea of the flapper era and sort of sexual liberation that was going on for women, it was the first break with the Victorian idea of womanhood. And the fact that a lot of these songwriters, like Larry Hart, were writing these wonderful, racy, suggestive kind of lyrics was a new thing in itself. But the fact that Dorothy was doing it, too, as a woman, really made a big difference.
Dorothy Fields grew up in the vaudeville era. In fact, her father, Lou Fields, was a famous vaudeville comic and producer. What was he most famous for within vaudeville?
Lou Fields was most famous as half of the comedy team Weber and Fields that were famous for their slapstick routines and were actually credited with inventing the custard pie in the face and the joke that began, "Who was that lady I saw you with last night?" And the punchline, of course, was, "That was no lady, that was my wife."
So Dorothy Fields grew up with all these jokes around her.
Yeah, it was interesting, though, because Lou Fields and his wife, Rose, were very, very conscious that their children shouldn't be brought up in a show business setting because it was a really disreputable field to be in at the time.
Nevertheless, Dorothy Fields and two of her brothers went into showbiz, and she actually wrote several books for musicals with her brother, Herbert. And this is such an interesting show business family story. Dorothy and Herb Fields, they were friends with Rodgers and Hart. So I'm wondering how the Dorothy Fields generation of songwriters and her father Lou Fields and his generation, how they helped each other.
Well, Dorothy and Rodgers and Hart and Herb, there was a whole young set of these really smart young creative people who had come of age in the jazz age and really started to make musicals. Herb began collaborating with Rodgers and Hart. He wrote the librettos to all their early musicals. And Lou began to produce all the early Rodgers and Hart shows. And so what happened was, on one hand, it was Lou Fields who gave Rodgers and Hart their start. And on the other hand, it was Herb and the young generation who really gave Lou Fields a new lease on life.
Deborah, did having Lou Fields as a father make it any easier for Dorothy Fields to get into theater and songwriting?
Well, on the one hand, it did not, because her parents were really dead set against her going into the business at all. They were very intent on raising all their children as young ladies and gentlemen, particularly the girls. And Dorothy went to finishing school and led a kind of a sheltered life in that way. And when she began to be introduced around to the music publishing houses, he went so far as to use his influence to keep her from being hired. The thing was, though, the flip side of that was that once she was in, I think being Lou Fields' daughter opened a lot of doors, as she was in a very privileged position as far as who the family friends were, who she was associating with, and again, being Herb Fields' sister and being in this group with Dick Rogers and Larry Hart and Oscar Hammerstein, I think that really, really helped. I mean, she was in.
Well, you tell the story in your biography of how Dorothy Fields got started in songwriting. She met J. Fred Coots, the songwriter who was probably best known for You Go to My Head and Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And he suggested that she try writing lyrics. And they did some songs together and then made the rounds of the music publishers trying to sell the songs. I'm going to let Dorothy Fields tell the story. And this story offers a great picture of what it took to get started and what the industry was like in the 1920s when she was starting out in songwriting. This is an excerpt of her appearance at the 92nd Street Y's Lyrics and Lyricists series in New York in 1972.
Now, Mills Music was a fast-working firm. In 1921, when Enrico Caruso died, overnight they had a song. They needed a songbird in heaven, so God took Caruso away. Then a few years later, they needed a new star in heaven, so God took Rudolph Valentino away. Well, 1924, I think it was, they figured that since Ruth Elder was going to fly the Atlantic, what else a song? Irving Mills decided to give me a chance. What could they lose for $50? Mr. Mills said, "I'll give you the first two lines of the chorus, and we'll call it Our American Girl." These were the two lines. You took a notion to fly across the ocean. I said timidly, but with great conviction, Mr. Mills, you don't take a notion to fly across the ocean. But I wrote it overnight anyway. Ruth Elder never made it, and neither of my sister's song. Now, the Mills Music Company couldn't get rid of me. I became their $50 a night girl. For $50, I got 100 words.
Do you think that being a woman presented any obstacles to her when she was breaking in?
Again, that's a dual answer. Songwriters in those days would work on Tin Pan Alley, which was, of course, the kind of generic term for the business of music publishing. And so it was really a bunch of these cubicles with these kind of cigar-chomping kind of guys pounding out hack tunes on the piano. Of course, there were some really talented people who began there, too, but there were also a lot of hacks. And it was not a particularly elegant or genteel place for anybody, let alone for a young girl. However, once she was in, Dorothy didn't see herself as being discriminated against in any way. Not only did she not see herself as different, but her colleagues looked at her as an equal colleague.
Well, the manager at Mills Music, Jimmy McHugh, ended up being her songwriting partner, and together they wrote Sunny Side of the Street, Digga Digga Doo, I'm in the Mood for Love, Don't Blame Me. They started off writing songs for reviews that were that featured black performers, even though the composers of the songs and the writers of the material were white. Was that a pretty common setup then, that whites would be writing for black performers?
That was a very common setup at that time. A lot of these songwriters were, most of them were white Jewish songwriters. And so Gershwin's stuff, Harold Arlen's stuff, all these people were writing in the kind of black sort of bluesy idiom. And that was very exciting. And it was very much the fashion also. And it created a kind of a dual situation where at one time, with the hindsight of the post-civil rights era, it was discriminatory. And at the same time, this was giving genuine opportunity to black performers. Today, you'd look back at those shows, and we can say that none of those shows are going to be revived anytime soon. But at that time, it was very much of a big thing.
Dorothy Fields was famous for her very colloquial lyrics and sometimes suggestive lyrics. But there's a very funny story that she tells about her first show at the Cotton Club in the late 1920s. Duke Ellington was the orchestra that was performing. And, well, I'll let her tell the story. This is a story she told in 1972 when she was appearing at the 92nd Street Y's Lyrics and Lyricists series in New York.
At the Cotton Club, we had Duke Ellington. I think it was his first appearance in New York. The review was called Hot Chocolates, and there was a singer whose name I choose to forget. It was my first show, opening Sunday night. My whole family was there. Mom, Pop, my sister Frances, brother Herbert, brother Joe. And at our table was a good friend of my father, Walter Winchell. And the program read, Music, Jimmy McHugh, Lyrics, Dorothy Fields. And the family was very proud for a quick minute. Then Miss What's-Her-Name came on for her specialty. And did she sing the songs Jimmy McHugh and I wrote for her? She did not. She belted out three of the most shocking, ribald, bawdy, dirtiest songs anyone had ever heard in the 1920s. I looked at McHugh, McHugh looked at me. My father didn't look at my mother. My brothers and sister looked down at their plates, and nobody dared to look at Walter Winchell. My father said, you didn't learn those words home. I said, I didn't write those words. And Pop got up from the table and had a few choice things to say to the management. At his insistence, at intermission, they announced that McHugh and Fields did not write the songs for Miss blank, blank, blank. The only comment my father made to me was, will you, for God's sakes, get out of show business?
There was Dorothy Fields as recorded in 1972, and my guest is her biographer, Deborah Grace Weiner. Deborah, what did it take for Dorothy Fields' father to recognize that her talent was really great and that he should support her career?
Well, the funny thing is that he really came to appreciate what she could do. I mean, for one thing, by the time she was 30, she won the Academy Award for The Way You Look Tonight. And he was tremendously proud of her for that. And, you know, the other thing was that she was wildly successful almost from the beginning. She started making a ton of money. When they wrote I Can't Give You Anything But Love, it was like the biggest, I mean, it was a number one chart record. And in an era when sheet music sales were the big thing, it was on every piano in America. Everybody played it on the ukulele. Everybody was singing it, you know, on the beach. And it was like, it was as hip as, you know, a Madonna song, you know, would be in these times.
Deborah Grace Winer is the author of On the Sunny Side of the Street, The Life and Lyrics of Dorothy Fields. Dave Frischberg and Rebecca Kilgore will perform some songs from Fields' early career when she was collaborating with Jimmy McHugh. That's after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air.